Hello, horror, wine, and crime people, and hello, Lo. How are you?
Hey, hey, what's up? What's up, creepies? What's up, Lola Butts? We got an audience member again today.
Our favorite audience member. One of our favorites.
Yes.
So, Lo, how's things been since last week?
Doing pretty good. It's cold outside still, so that's a bummer, but it finally stopped snowing. We just got like a shit ton of it.
Oh, that was crazy.
But some things that I've done. I finished my last book, so we can do a What's Low reading.
Oh, yeah, an update.
So I finished Middle of the Night. And it was okay. It was pretty good. First one I read by him. And I want to say it was entertaining and it was enough for me to finish the book. But there was no real like, oh my God, I'm at the edge of my seat. I want to finish dinner quickly and ignore my family and go finish my book. You know what I mean?
That's when you know it's not like that great of a book.
But I am on to a new one. And I've heard nothing but amazing things about this book. So, and I'm behind in the book life, people, so don't judge, okay? You can leave comments on what you think of the book and, you know, whatever, but so I'm reading, it's called The Silent Patient.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
And there's a lot of talk with this book. A lot of people are saying this is like a real and amazing book, so I will let you know if I'm on board with it.
Probably well, it sounds interesting.
Because I'm not the fastest reader in the world. But we'll see.
Have you started yet or you haven't yet?
Yeah, I'm on chapter one, which is literally like counting the prologue and the chapter. I think I'm on page 9.
Okay. Hey, you know what? You're making progress.
In my defense, I finished one book and then started flipping through this like all in the same night. I had book hangover the next day. So
yeah, no, that's a lot. I'm not a reader, so that would be a lot for me.
I want to dive into it tonight before bed.
Nice. Well, look forward to that update because that title sounds interesting alone. And if it's, you know, kind of deemed popular.
Right.
Love it.
First of all, I want to just let you all know we are drinking some St. Julian's peach wine. So we are sipping on home state wine while we chat.
So crisp and so refreshing.
Yes. Crystal's all about the peach. She loves the peach flavored drinks.
I do.
The only crown I can get her to probably sip on.
Yeah.
The one you didn't like.
Actually, I can't remember. You had me try, I think, 2 or 3 of them, and I really only liked one.
Might have been the peach then.
So it might have been the peach. I can't remember because I can't even remember the other flavors. With apple. It would have been
peach, apple, and maybe vanilla.
Yeah, I feel like I would have liked peach the most out of those three.
They have a new blackberry one. I haven't tried it yet.
That might be okay. I feel like the berry ones I would be better with than... Well, I don't. The apple, I know I didn't like, but you know me, I'm not.
Nothing as good as the sheepdog that the sheepdog we would take down.
Oh yeah, that stuff is great. So, no complaints there.
So, I finished earlier today because it was a day off, and I finished the Gabby Petito documentary.
How was it?
It was good. It was sad. I welled up a few times listening to her family and friends talk. It's only 3 episodes, so it's not super long. I mean, there's not much they can really probably, because they only can go by the video footage that they found. But an interesting fact that I've seen online is that they used an AI voice instead of her real voice.
Was she like narrating or something, or like what was the
no, like for? I'm guessing through the video clips that they would show.
Oh, why did they do that? Maybe better sound quality or something?
So apparently there was a lot of criticism due to using her AI voice, but according to the Vulture and US Weekly, they did get the parents' blessing and even vo the permission from family. And it sounds like they wanted it to just sound more like crisp, more clean, coming from like, because it would have been off like a phone video or a camera video. So probably to sound more clear for the documentary.
Okay, that makes sense. That's good they got the family's permission too, because that could have been dicey.
And they said that, you know, with some of the stuff that she had, because a lot of her stuff was like written in journals or through text message that she would read, you could get from her voice and really get what she was saying instead of a documentary speak over saying this, you know how they show like this is a letter that was found and it like shows it on the camera for, you know, 14 seconds.
Right.
So. But it was
Nice.
sad. I mean, we all knew the ending. We all knew the outcome of it. It wasn't going to, you know,
Right. No
kind of
happy
watching.
endings at all
Yeah.
there.
But it was, yeah, it was definitely, it was heartbreaking because she seemed so sweet and just so full of love for the world and travel and nature and just did not sync up with the right guy and his parents, and just oh my God, I wanted to punch him through the screen.
His parents.
Yeah, like when they were
Yeah.
hiding him and wouldn't talk to the cops, and like all that bullshit time they wasted, and
Right.
yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna be watching that one.
It's pretty quick. It's.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 episodes definitely isn't long, so. Ugh, man.
And then going into dream state, one, I had one of those funky dreams again with the something coming at me. And I was telling my daughter's dad's girlfriend about it. And she told me to make sure I'm checking the time when that happened. So I looked at the clock and it was 1:12 a.m. I don't know what that means, but she did say between 1 and 3 is witching hour.
Okay.
So maybe that's when like a lot of things happen in the universe. I'm not sure. I did buy a witch's book. I don't know if you've seen it on my Snap story. It's the Witch's Apothecary book.
Ooh, cool.
And it's got some cool stuff in it. I'm still kind of going through it, but I'm like, maybe I need to focus on some of these protection spells in here and like some home remedy stuff and just like home, like essential oils that you can make and candles that you can make that are, you know, safe
Yeah.
and lighthearted and good vibes. 'Cause I think I need that right now.
Yeah, what was the so it was a face that came at you this past time?
No, it was like an object.
Is this the same one that you said last week, or is this a different one? Because I know it was an
I
object
don't
last
really
week
remember
too.
what the last one was. I just remembered something coming at me really quick and I like gasped for air and then I woke up.
Yeah. I'm so curious what is happening, like,
I
with all
know.
of that?
I want to find some like, does someone want to do like a sleep study on me? And
Yeah, seriously.
but with my luck, like it won't happen at those times, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because like you're being like watched or whatever by like the medical people or whoever freaking does that. I
Or if
don't
I put a
know.
can in my room, what if it turns into like total paranormal activity? I would freak out for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that. That
Yeah,
would
me
be way too
neither. I don't
scary.
want to know. At
Yeah,
that
because
point,
I
just keep
would
it to
be
yourself.
far too scared to even fall asleep in the
Yeah.
future if that
Like
happened.
at that point, don't even tell me.
Yep, I don't want to know. I'm asleep. It's none of my
Long as
business.
you're not hurting me, do your thing, guys.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I'd just rather not know then.
And to follow up with that, I did look up bed shakes.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Now, I'm sure I could dive deeper into it because a lot of people are asking about, you know, things like on Reddit and all this stuff, but it kind of took a different path. When I stayed on Google, it's saying that it's like the unevenness of your mattress. If you're used to laying on this part, sometimes it just kind of like balances itself back out and kind of like jerks.
Okay.
I don't know how much of that's true. I still feel like something weird just happened, but
yeah, because it's like a little like earthquake shake,
and
it's
kind of like, yeah.
Why did this just happen? That's so funny, huh? Audience member down.
Did you hear that?
I did hear.
I thought she
did.
Was
she
like,
hit her head or something?
No, it sounded on my end like she was going to throw up or spit something up. But
oh, it's
we're all like good.
On my
I looked
end.
Down and she's just like looking at me, trying to lick my face. So
she's like, "I'm fine, Mom."
Maybe she doesn't like the incense I'm burning.
Oh, she doesn't like the smell of it or the smoke.
Maybe.
Or whatever.
I don't know. Now she's just laying down. Okay, moving on. And then I don't know if we touched on this before, but I am going to say it anyway. So I was talking to my friend Chrissy, my G, my OG, and she had told me that she was listening to one of our stories while she was driving. And the one she was listening to, it was the one where we talked about Yellowstone, and we said, oh, this whole show could be a Texas show.
Yeah.
And then you're like, but Yellowstone was filmed in Montana or Colorado or whatever. She called and told me, I want to tell you that part of Yellowstone was filmed in Texas. She's like, I'm driving and was yelling at the radio, it's a Texas show. It's a Texas show. It was filmed partly in Texas.
I guess that does kind of count. Yeah, because there were scenes where they were in Texas, like where the show took place in Texas. Because like one of the guys like went to a different ranch in Texas or whatever. So that is true.
So I want to say thanks, G, for being a listener and commenting, well, personally straight to me. It wasn't really on the app, but it was nice to know that like a friend listened and decided she wanted to follow up on something she heard. So that was kind of fun and cool. I mean, other people tell me stuff sometimes too, but.
Right. Shout out Chrissy.
Right.
Whenever
and
I hear her
speaking
name,
of, huh?
I was just going to say, whenever I hear like you say her name, I've never like met her or anything, but I sing that Stranger Things song.
Chrissy, wake up.
Yeah.
I don't like this. Chrissy, wake up. Everybody was singing that for like a year.
Oh my gosh. It just like goes immediately to my head when you say her name.
Which is funny because that show is about to come back, I think, soon.
Gosh, they take like 6 years in between each season. It's
I know, like they're all in college now.
Literally.
So speaking of, it's kind of funny. I say my G, and she got the nickname G because we used to hang out like before Charlotte was even born. I met her, but she showed up years ago when I was still living with Charlotte's dad, and she rolled up into like this gray or silver caddy, and I was like, "Dang, girl." And I was laughing. I was like, all right. I was like, you're like a G now. Like, you're like a homie. Like, you're okay. You're pretty fly for a white girl, you know. And we're just kind of like laughing it all off. I was like, you fancy. You got a caddy. And so it just kind of stuck. And I put her in my phone book as my G. And then just whenever I seen her, I'm like, what up, my G? And from then on, we just say, what's up, my G? Anytime we're talking, or she'll start
texting. That's funny.
Hey, G. And then when Charlotte was born, Charlotte was Lil G, L-I-L-G.
Lil G.
So that's where the G came from. You guys are welcome. Enjoy it. Chrissy, I hope you're listening to the history of the G and laughing. Pay attention to the road, though.
Yeah.
And one more thing before my K. I got a G and a K.
Creating the alphabet. You're just creating the squad of the alphabet.
Right. I listened to, and I'm going to send it to you, Kay, if you can listen to it for free, it's worth it. I listened to It was Snoop Dogg on Amazon. It was on Audible, but I think it was under the free ones because it didn't charge me. And it is cold. From the streets to the suites. And it, they have Snoop Dogg talking about some of his songs and some of his past. And, oh my God, it's talking. Stop. And it was just really fun to listen to. It talked about like how he got like Gin and Juice and La-Di-Da-Di and the history of all these songs. And there were some things that really surprised me. Like, I didn't know LL Cool J was popular before he was. Like,
okay.
Sorry, Snoop, but putting side by side, it looked like Snoop would be older. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so
like,
too.
And so there's just like a few things that, you know, surprised me, like how he was nervous about meeting Dre and how Dre don't like nothing. He ain't going to like this song, but then Dre ended up loving Drop It Like It's Hot. And like, so it's only like an hour and a half.
Is it him like narrating it?
Yes. He's talking. Oh, that's cool. He's telling the stories. And cool. I was listening to it while I cleaned yesterday. And I felt like it was a good time I was cleaning because I had Snoop in my ear. So I'm going to recommend you guys going to Audible and listening to From the Streets to the Suites.
That's awesome. The title alone sounds just amazing. And the fact that he narrates it.
Yeah, so
that's awesome.
I recommend it. See what I did there?
Yeah.
My high recommendation.
So fitting for the Snoop wreck.
But I would like to see Snoop, like, after listening to him on The Voice, re-sing. Oh my gosh, my friends are texting me, and please stop because you're dinging my laptop.
I'm recording. Blowing up the phone.
I don't know how to make that so it doesn't go to my laptop. I have to take the time to figure that out.
I'm a PC girly, so I can't help you out with that.
I'll figure it out. Hopefully she'll just stop. But I was going to say, I'd like to hear Snoop do like a little R&B, like where he sings. Like a little bit, like a little bit more like when he did that Pharrell song.
Yeah. I would like because that too.
He's got a nice soulful voice. Like
he he does. It's like a smooth voice too.
Yeah. So just putting that out there. I mean, you know, do what you do. It's been working for you so far, but you know.
Right. Man, he's got like an empire, dude. He's got so many different things like going on. Do you know what I mean? Like he's got the wine. He's got cookbooks. He's got the voice. He's got his music. He's been acting. Like he's got the books. Like he's just got so much in his bag. It's like crazy.
And he's even got a kids show.
What?
Yeah, he dresses up as like a purple dinosaur, not Barney, but he's got like a little.
What the fuck?
You haven't seen it?
No, he has a kids show.
Yeah, it's like for like kind of like to, you know, stop bullying, don't do drugs. It's a.
Snoop Dogg has a kid show telling kids not to do drugs. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Can you imagine he's stoned while he's doing it?
That's what I'm saying. He probably is.
When it
That's
comes,
amazing.
There's endless surprises.
Oh my gosh, that man can do it all. Wow.
Affirmations are positive statements that help us to challenge and overcome when you're not feeling good and have negative thoughts. So repeat after me. Come on, everyone. There is no one better to be than myself.
There's no one better to be than myself.
Today is going to be an amazing day.
Today is going to be an amazing day.
My feelings.
Oh my gosh. I'm having children immediately so that they can watch that.
Yay! I've been waiting for so long.
That's hilarious. Even if I don't, like, I'll just watch it. Like, that's so great. What the heck?
And it's funny, though, because he does talk about that on the thing I listened to about how he, like, how Death Row was so dark and negative for a long time around that Pac and Biggie era. And then, he bought the masters to it and he's like, all right, let's turn it, because labels were scared like people were scared to sign with them because Death Row was just like Death Row Records, you know what I mean? It had a stigma. And so he's like, you know what, we're basically gonna like turn it around, let's make it light, let's get the vibes high and happy. And like he like tried to clean it up and revamp it, so to speak.
What a guy. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's all about, he talks about all about happy vibes.
I love it.
I know. And
what an icon.
One more thing before she records. I'm sorry, people, but I forgot about this too. Have you seen all over TikTok the guy that looks exactly like Tupac?
No. I don't know. We're always on very different TikToks for some reason.
I see like people talking about it on TikTok, like, you know how like the people will be talking and they talk about like other TikTok videos or they'll show a clip and then talk about it.
Yeah.
And the people are reading the comments and they're like, I'm dying. That's not Tupac, it's 3-Pac. Close enough, drop the album.
Oh my gosh.
You waited for Diddy to get caught, which I said that.
You did.
I said it first.
That was your prediction.
So I'm kind of cracking up that when I thought I sent it to you. Yeah. But I'm dying. And close enough, drop the album.
That is so funny. Seriously, he looks just like him.
There's a lady on there. She's like, oh my God, you got all the, am I a Gen X, Gen Z? What am I?
I don't know. Are you a Gen X? You're not a Gen Z. So maybe you must be a Gen X.
I'm not a millennial, right? You are, right?
Yeah, I'm a millennial.
But yeah, when the lady's like, you got the Gen Xers going crazy. And then she played the video.
That's awesome. He does look just like him. That's crazy.
I know. Okay, now that I did all my gossip, crime, book, whatever, everything I needed to say, I'm sorry. I know it was a little bit longer. Chrissy, dang it!
Chrissy! She's our special guest. She's going to tell the story tonight.
Chris was like, hi, bitch. Can't even get my name right now. Whatever. Who's this Chrissy bitch?
Hey, it's close enough. Close enough to my name.
Kay is going to take us down the story that she found. And while I don't know what she's doing, I am going to listen with y'all and take it how you guys take it.
Yes. Well, today we're going to talk about the devil wore white, or the devil who wore white, whatever. The title comes from a Dateline special on NBC. Definitely caught my attention just from the title alone. So I just figured, you know, it'd be a good topic, fun to do an episode on it. We love Dateline specials. So I was like, I'm going to pluck this from here. So we're going to start the story talking about a widow and a philanthropist, someone named Irene Silverman. She was a very small and like very energetic, outgoing lady. She was 82 years old. She mysteriously vanished from her multi-million dollar townhouse right on Manhattan's Upper East Side back in the summer of 1998. So her disappearance happened to go along with another missing person, a 23-year-old man and a woman in her 60s who had just moved a few weeks earlier into one of the apartments that were super like elegant and fancy, by the way, that Irene rented out in her building for, get this, $10,000 a month for these apartments. That's how expensive they were, which is just crazy because it was like back in the 90s too. So that's even more wild.
Well, it is Manhattan's Upper East, so.
That's true. Very true. I'm like, man, what does that go for today then? Because that's crazy. But there was no coincidence because it was soon discovered that Irene's former tenants named Kenny Kimes and his mother, Sante, a pair of grifters that were wanted for cross-country series of crimes, ones that we're definitely about to get into, were responsible for her mysteriously being vanished.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I'm not Keith Morrison, but I try my best.
Shout out to the...
Oh, the myth, the legend.
Yes.
Yep.
The shoes we all want to fill.
Yeah, literally. So we're going to take it back a bit, talking a little bit about who Sante and Kenneth Kimes were. So Sante Kimes was born, her name being Sandra Louise Singers. She was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, on July 24th, 1934. She was the third of four children. Her mother's name was Mary Von Horn, coming from Illinois, and her father's name was Prama Mahendra Singers. He was an East Indian immigrant. So when Sante was 3 years old, her father sadly abandoned the family, and her mother then unfortunately resorted to prostitution to support the family, which is just really sad because it resulted in Sante being molested by several adults while her mother was working in that industry. It's just so sad because, like, you know, the dad left. It was, what did I say, like the 30s, and, you know, the mom was just trying to do what she was trying to do to support her family, but it just really was not a good situation at all.
Well, also back then, she was not allowed to do a whole lot. I mean, it wasn't even to the 50s that we were allowed to claim taxes.
Right, later, yeah, for real. So she had limited options for sure. According to Sante's estranged sister, she said that Sante had an incestuous relationship with her older brother, and she said she was a pyromaniac. She would, like, hold up lit matches underneath her sister's fingers against her will. And even as a child, Sante would tie up the goats and dogs on her family's farm and just, like, mutilate and just torture them. So... she wasn't the most sunshine of a child, I guess you could say. She definitely had some problems.
Yeah, those were not the words I would use.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely was interesting personality-wise. And when she was a teenager, Sante moved with her mother and sister to Los Angeles, California. And she was then adopted by Edwin and Mary Chambers, along with another boy. She moved with her new family then from Los Angeles to Carson City, Nevada, where she graduated from Carson High School in 1952. So at school, Sante definitely earned a reputation as a bully who she would just go around belittling and, you know, messing with, intimidating younger students.
And no surprise there, what she did to the goats.
I know, like, she kind of was a little bit of a little tyrant, it sounds like. In 1956, she reunited with a former boyfriend that she had in high school. His name was Edward Walker. They ended up getting married the following year, and they had one son named Kent Walker. And after a 1961 shoplifting conviction in Sacramento, Sante separated and reconciled back and forth with her husband, kind of very on and off situation. But then their divorce did ultimately get finalized in 1969. Now, her husband, Walker, was a general contractor who built homes in the Sacramento area. And crazy enough, in December of 1960, Sante decided casually, you know, to set fire to a house that he had built to fraudulently collect insurance on it. Makes me think of what her sister had said about her, calling her a pyromaniac when she was a child. Yeah, kind of. It's adding up. But her plan didn't really go that successful because she only destroyed the kitchen and she received $10,000, which at that time is equivalent to $103,000 now. So, you know, it's a pretty good payday for her. I mean, imagine what would have happened if she burnt the whole house down. But during the course of their marriage, dozens of homes that her husband Walker had supervised, you know, mysteriously burnt down. Isn't that weird? It's just a weird coincidence. And also, Sante, she had a number of affairs with his wealthy business associates also. So I think it's safe to say we kind of maybe have a good idea of why they got divorced. Makes sense.
Run far away.
Yeah, literally. And he did. He took him a few tries, but, you know, he got there. So after her first divorce, Sante and her son traveled to Palm Springs. And in 1971, she met motel tycoon Kenneth Keith Kimes Sr. What a name. What a name. I'll just say that. He was 17 years older than her. And after reading about his divorce in a magazine article and learning that he had like a net worth of basically $20 million, which now would equivalate to $115 million. She was like, you know, sign me up. Like, hello, Mr. Kenneth Keith Kimes, please marry
sign
me
up. And also, can we change that will?
Yeah, literally. That was her plan, I believe. And she got what she wanted. They got married in Clark County, Nevada on April 5th, 1981. And then they had one son, Kenneth Kimes Jr. He was born March 24th, 1975. So Sante spent the better part of her life just basically conning people out of their money, you know, conning them out of expensive merchandise and real estate. You know, her tactics were like arson, elaborate con games, forgery, or just like straight up theft. She committed insurance fraud on number of occasions, pretty frequent, by committing arson and then collecting money for property damage. I think that was her go-to tactic. She also frequently introduced her husband, Kenneth Sr., as an ambassador, which was a ploy that got the couple access to a White House reception during the Ford administration. And sometimes she would even impersonate Elizabeth Taylor, who she did kind of slightly resemble. But yeah, she would go around impersonating her, which is just odd move, but whatever. Sante committed many acts of fraud that were not even like financially necessary. You know what I mean? Because she married this rich guy and it's like, why are you doing all this? Like, you're fine. You don't even need to do this. It's not like you're like struggling in the streets and you're like, I'll do anything for money. Like, you married someone rich. Like, I think that you don't need to do that. I think she was just like addicted to like the crime of it all.
Oh my God. I was about to say she was addicted. And right as I thought of the word addicted, you said it out loud. I was going to say, I think she was just addictive to being evil.
Great minds think alike. Yeah. Yeah, she would just, you know, do all these scams. She even like enslaved maids when she could literally easily afford to pay them. So basically she would do this a lot. She would offer young, homeless, undocumented immigrants housing and employment, and then kept them as like basically prisoners by threatening to report them to the authorities if they didn't follow all of her orders, which is just like such, it's just so evil. You know what I mean? Like, that's just evil shit.
That sounds like she's going on like an entitlement or just like a very ugly ego, nasty vibe.
Yeah, she's just not a great person at all. And as a result, her and Kenneth Sr. spent years, you know, going over his fortune on lawyers' fees, just defending themselves against these charges of slavery after people were kind of going after her for it. Now, Kenneth Jr., to be specific, her youngest son, he went out as a young man on a deadly crime spree with his mother. And he kind of spoke out about it a little bit. And we'll hear like kind of what he has to say too. But going back to Irene Silverman, the woman that vanished from that luxurious townhome in New York, she was like immediately suspicious of Kenneth Jr. You know, she wasn't sure how she felt really about renting an apartment out to him. He was 6'1", dark hair, green eyes, and he barely spoke. He was very, very quiet. You know, she said every time that he went through the foyer and up the marble stairs, he just like hid his face from the security camera, which is just weird behavior because it's like, if you're living there, why are you hiding your face from the camera? And some days he would sneak in an older woman who spent the night and just in like a super sneaky, evasive kind of way. So clearly it turns out that Irene had every reason to be nervous about the situation, because the older woman that he was bringing up was in fact his mother. It was a mother and son duo of Sante and Kenneth, and they were just on the run after a bash of a bunch of financial scams and violence that stretched from LA to all the way to the freaking Bahamas. Like, they went all over the place.
Wasn't your last story a mom and son duo? Wasn't Chop Chop Costa's mom involved or something?
No. No, I don't think his mom was involved at all.
You talked about something and we said it was a mother-son duo.
Mother-son duo with Chop Chop. Why am I?
Maybe it wasn't Chop Chop. Maybe it was a different story you were.
I'll have to go back and think of that, because I can't think right now of mother-son duo thing.
Okay. Well, you keep talking and I'll see if I can remember.
Okay.
Sorry.
We'll sidebar that for now, but we'll get back. Because yeah, I'm curious. I'm like, what am I? I'm spacing. I can't think. But that'd be funny if it was, because yeah, what's with the mother son crimes going on? I swear last week we talked
about some kind of mother son
situation. I'm blanking. But yeah, so they had a bunch of crimes all over the place, and police were on their trail. They had used an alias to move into Irene's apartment. So, like, they weren't going by their actual names when they were living there. A few weeks after they started living there, that's when Irene vanished, and she literally was never seen again. She was reported missing on July 5th, 1998, setting off a series of events that just unraveled the whole twisted background of the Kimes and all their frauds and arsons and all their crimes, and even murders. So in a rare interview with CNN, Kenneth Kimes talked to them, and he kind of went over what happened during his years as his mother's accomplice. So he from all of the situations that he went through with his mom and everything that she dragged him through, it landed him in prison without the possibility of parole. He's now 49 years old, and he's opening up and finally talking about everything that happened, the history of his family's violence and just instability and all the bad choices that turned him into the person he became. So he remembered his wealthy father adored him and really tried to give him a normal childhood, while his mother, she was in federal prison for keeping maids in expensive homes in three different states without paying them, going back to the whole slavery maid thing, which was one of her many crimes. After she was released for that situation, she started to kind of pull Kenneth into her like web of crimes, pulling him in to be like her accomplice. And Kenneth says, you know, if I could only have an hour with my younger self, I would say, buddy, you have to file for emancipation from your parents. He would say, you have to save yourself, and it's going to be rough because you're going to have to be very independent and learn how to make a buck. And when you emancipate from your parents and establish yourself, you need to go back and help them. And that's just really sad to hear, because he was like, you know, he was essentially like younger and just a kid, really being pulled into this just like crazy life with his mom, who was just a straight up evil criminal. So it's sad that he's in prison now and kind of looking back and being like, what the heck did I do with my life?
Well, unfortunately, it's probably a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So when they moved into Irene's townhouse, Sante was 64 and Kenneth was 23. Irene, like I said, very wealthy. She was a former Radio City ballerina. She was a socialite. She lived alone after the death of her husband, who was a banker. She had no children or anything, but her close circle of friends just constantly checked on her. She was big into like going out and just staying social, I guess. And she had turned some rooms in her townhouse into rental apartments. A retired detective, Thomas Ryan, said it wasn't so much as to make money, but to have company, because, you know, she lived alone. It probably just, which is really twisted now, but she probably did it to like feel more safe and feel like she had people around her, so she wasn't like alone in there. But then it's like, oh my gosh, she rented it out to the worst set of people there were. And in the summer of 1998, Irene, you know, she really had no way of knowing that her tenant and his mysterious older lady that would go with him, who was actually his mother, she didn't know that they were wanted for questioning on theft, arson, and murder charges, like, all throughout, like I said, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Nassau, and Bahamas. Because, like I said, they went under aliases, so she was unaware that they had even a record, and she also, of course, didn't know that they moved into her home with one goal. Which their goal for moving into Irene's apartment was to take her fortune and her property. But kind of like people had said, she really didn't trust Kenneth. And she spoke about evicting him before she disappeared, just because he gave her weird vibes, like I said, with like the whole being sneaky in his own home and like hiding his face from the cameras and everything. So on the same day that Irene was reported missing, conveniently, the mother and son vanished too. They were arrested in New York City later that day on an unrelated warrant for writing a bad check to like a car dealer who sold them a green Lincoln Town Car. So super random, but you know, life.
Imagine how that brings you down.
I know, literally, like, it's so crazy. But I mean, it's like a trail, you know, if you're doing everything illegally, like something's going to catch up with you. But yeah, police found incriminating items in the car. They found guns, wigs, a date rape drug, a notebook detailing their plans, and several personal items belonging to Irene, including her keys and a forged deed to her townhouse. So they really hit the evidence jackpot inside of this car.
Oh my gosh.
So as investigators dug deeper, they learned that Manny Guerin, who was the name that Kenneth Kimes gave Silverman when he rented the apartment, they were like, this Manny person does not exist. They were like realizing that that was his alias. And they then discovered that Sante Kimes had a very extensive criminal record, which included a mid-1980s prison sentence for smuggling women from Central America to serve as maids in her mansion in Las Vegas, Hawaii, and San Diego. And then, like I said, enslaving them without pay. So they kind of figured who she was, put all the pieces together, and they're like, okay, these people are sketchy. We really need to look into this. So as they were kind of like looking into Sante and Kenneth, police learned that the pair was wanted in several states. In Nevada, they were suspected of arson and insurance fraud. In California, they were suspected of shooting a businessman in the back of the head and stashing his body in a dumpster near Los Angeles Airport. And in the Bahamas, they were suspects in the 1996 disappearance of a banker who was last seen having dinner with them in Nassau. So, Kent Walker, Sante's son from her first marriage, he was not involved in any of this. It was just her and Kenneth. He told CNN that his mother's charisma and ruthlessness made her a dangerous grifter. He said, my mother could make every man in the room feel like the most important person on the planet. So he knew. He's like, she tries to charm people. She tries to, you know, get away with everything. And he was just very aware of how she operated. But the Kimes denied that they had anything to do with Irene's disappearance. In a 2000 interview with Larry King, Sante called their arrest a witch hunt, saying that they were victims of mistaken identity. She said, there is no crime. There is no body. I used to believe in this country. I don't believe in this country anymore. Which is just funny because she was like holding back tears while she was saying all this as well. Now, he says that he confessed to spare his mother the death penalty. So in May of 2000, a New York jury convicted Sante Kimes of killing Irene and sentenced them to 120 years to life in prison. And 4 years later, Kenneth made a pretty big revelation. He confessed to killing also the Los Angeles businessman and implicated his mother at her trial in exchange for a plea deal that would spare them both the death penalty. So, you know, he said, I want to make it clear that I did not confess because I wanted to rat my mom out. I confessed because I was afraid of the death penalty for me and her. So, you know, he would have stayed silent if they weren't threatening the death penalty against them. He also provided details on how they killed Irene, saying, you know, he became her tenant primarily so he and his mother could swindle her out of her home. He told authorities that he tackled the 5 foot, 115 pound Irene Silverman in her bedroom while his mom turned on the TV to mask the noise. He said, do it, she told him. He then strangled Irene, stuffed her body in the car, and dumped it in a construction site in northern New Jersey. And her remains still have never been found.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Kime said that the last time he saw his mother was at his 2004 confession in a Los Angeles courtroom. She was in a wheelchair, gray hair, you know, and he said, when I started confessing, she started crying. And I don't know if it was because, yeah, I don't know why she started crying. Because it's like, I don't know that she felt guilty. Because of all the horrible things that she's done, I don't feel like that. It's like maybe because she finally got caught and like it's all coming out and it's over and stuff. Or maybe because her son's in prison. I'm not sure why she really.
Probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, guilt of being a bad mom, guilt of her son growing up to be a bad man, guilt of all the things that she's done, like just everything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
If there's any human decency left in her, any kind of anything, that's where the tears are coming from.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some aspect of a human in there. I mean, it's sad because she had, you know, what sounded like to be a really terrible childhood. So I'm sure that played a factor into it. But also she had siblings and none of them turned out to be psychopaths. So
and I realize, you know, people who grew up being hurt tend to hurt. But I don't know. I guess the times are different. Mental health and, you know, therapy is not is in your face then as it is now.
Right.
But I don't know. I'd always pray and always wish that it'd be like, you learn from it, not I do this because of it. It's so easy to use it as an excuse. Like, be better. Like, that happened to you. So be better for your kids. Be present for your kids. Teach them better, you know?
Right. Yeah. You would think, I don't know, or you would hope, I guess, but sadly, that definitely wasn't the case in this situation. She did end up dying in a New York state prison in 2014, so she is no longer alive. Kenneth says, even as a child, he remembers his life was anything but normal. He said the family would take what he thought were cross-country vacations in a motorhome. He didn't realize until later that his parents were on the run from the FBI for kidnapping and enslaving their maids. When he was about 10, he witnessed the FBI raiding the family home near San Diego and arresting his parents. Looking back, he said that experience made him view authorities as enemies who were hurting his family. He said it had a huge damaging effect on my perspective, which I mean, I can only imagine just witnessing all that growing up and the toll that it would take on you and kind of how it would shape you as a person. So now, Kenneth Kimes Sr., so her husband, he pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. Yeah, and when Sante went to prison, her son Kenneth said, you know, he lived a somewhat normal life with his father while she was in prison for, like, the maid enslavement. He said, during that time, it was the most stable period of my young life. My dad was a decent, nice, and hardworking general contractor. I idolized my dad and did not want my mom back in my life. I wanted nothing to do with my mom. But 5 years after she was released from her first stint in prison, his father died of an aneurysm. So at that point, Sante kept the death a secret while she was still forging checks, withdrawing money, and trying to seize his bank accounts. It's just like, oh my gosh, he just died. And like, you have like a son with him that's like sad and mourning him. And you're just going to like do all this shady stuff with his name after he passed. It's just like terrible. Yeah. Kenneth was a student at the University of California, Santa Barbara at the time. And said that his mother hid the news of his father's death from him for 3 months, which is just That's wild. When he or other people called, you know, to talk to Kenneth, his dad, Sante would say that he was traveling or he was in the shower or he had laryngitis. Like, it was just like excuse after excuse of why he couldn't get on the phone.
But for 3 months, I feel like if I was going to call and I couldn't get a hold of my mom, something was going on. Like, for 3 months, I feel like I'd catch on pretty darn quick. Like,
yeah, you would think so.
After like a couple of days, I'd be like, what's really going on?
Right, because it's like, why can't I literally ever talk to my dad? Like, what's happening? Yeah, he said once he actually, like, finally learned about his father's death, he felt annihilated. He said it felt like the floor below me had collapsed. And it also just furthered his, like, toxic relationship with his mom. You know, she really, like, bullied him, basically, and she got him to gradually become her accomplice to all of her crimes. You know, his mother told him she was suicidal after the death of his father, which made him obviously feel sympathetic towards her. And so he withdrew from college and he went, like, on this excursion with her to find his father's money. So it just really wrapped him up in this whole life of crimes that he probably wouldn't have been involved in if she didn't drag him into it. But he said, that was my mom. She could just get people to do things. So Kenneth is incarcerated at the Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility, which is a state prison near San Diego, which also holds Lyle and Erica Menendez as well. So he's
ding, ding, ding.
He's roomies with them. Not exactly roomies, but, you know, close enough.
They're probably about to peace out.
I know. Yeah. We'll see what's happening with that. That's definitely waiting for that update. But yeah, he says a decade after her death, he still struggles with bad-mouthing his mom. He says, I know a lot of people in my situation would say she destroyed my life. He said, that's true to an extent, but I love my mom. She has a lot of baggage, and she was a complicated person with criminal tendencies, but I would never hate my mom. Which I get, you know. It was his mom, and he grew up with her, and it's like, probably hard to like feel that way, but also she did do really horrible, terrible things throughout his life, just wrangling him into it all as well.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, she probably did love him, and she probably did, you know, in her way of what she could show, you know,
right? Just kind of.
And like you said, I mean, your mom's best, your mom.
I guess.
Yeah. You only get one. I mean, biologically, there are plenty of moms out there that are just as loving and caring as biological moms, whether it's stepmom or adopted mom, or I guess that's the only other kind of moms, but yeah.
But yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, I feel for him because he's stuck in prison, but it's like, well, he was old enough where he knows he was doing things that were not right. But I do feel bad how he got into that place, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'll be there. He'll be there for the rest of his life. So that's unfortunate. I mean, I'm glad that he can reflect back and have regrets. And just kind of see what he did was actually wrong. But yeah, that the whole thing was just crazy. Just how many crimes that they had, like, you know, just two murders that they know of and countless, countless amounts of arson and conning people, forgery, enslaving people. Like, they weren't kidding with the title of the Devil Wore White with this lady.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of fire, though, did you see? So a man in Michigan has been arrested after authorities claim that he drove over 700 miles to set fire to the Pennsylvania home of a man who had been communicating with his ex-girlfriend online.
What the fuck? I definitely did not see that. That's
Harrison Jones, 21, of Rockford, Michigan, which if you don't know who that is, that's right up there by Grand Rapids, was arrested for setting fire to a man's home with six people inside. The six did survive and were hospitalized. However, two family dogs were reported unable to escape and died. Officials stated that the family managed to escape after the mother heard suspicious noises before discovering the fire and evacuating her family. They noted that some family members even had to jump out of a second story window to flee. They said it was a miracle that they all survived. And they credited the mother of the house for taking action when she did to protect her family and keep them all alive.
Damn. People are crazy, dude. Like, he went on a straight mission to go drive that far to go do that.
Yeah, to like someone that his ex-girlfriend was talking to.
That's wild.
I mean, do you think there's a reason why he's an ex?
Yeah, I would say so. Seems like it. Maybe he has rage issues or something. And so, like, it's not even like a spur of the moment kind of thing where he was just like mad, like out of control in the moment. Like, he had time, he had hours to like contemplate as he was driving there, and he still decided to do that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He did it like at 5 a.m., and I guess he sat outside for a while, probably to make sure the house caught on fire, and then drove off. There was a little bit of surveillance camera. It was grainy, and he was wearing black, but they were able to trace the car back to Jones. So obviously somebody picked up a license plate somewhere. Come on, people. Everybody's got their ring now. You're going to get caught. Stop doing shit.
I know, literally. There's cameras everywhere.
Yeah, I think he's charged with murderous intentions.
Good. Well, if the dog died, he should be charged with murder because he killed
the dog. Right, that too. Two of them. And it said he drove over 730 miles, which was 11 hours, to do what he did, and then directly right back home.
Yeah, no. He had time. He knew what he was doing.
He is charged with six counts of attempted homicide, arson, and related offenses. He is currently awaiting his, what do they call it when they like extradite you back to Pennsylvania?
Like the transportation back?
Pretty much, like, he'll leave Pennsylvania and probably do his time in
Michigan.
Yeah. Or he'll do his time in Pennsylvania because that's where the crime happened. So.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
He's waiting to get, but there is a GoFundMe page created to assist a family. They lost, like, everything. And it's just.
So senseless.
I know. Like, you think that's going to win your girlfriend back?
I know. Like, I just don't know what runs through people's minds.
I mean, maybe next time just, I don't know, try sending flowers, see what that does. I mean.
Yeah. Try that approach first. I feel like that would be more effective.
Cheaper than all the gas you just done paid for.
Gosh, for real. And all the time you're about to serve. That's crazy.
I know.
It's with these people and setting freaking fires.
And there was children in the house, you know, like.
It's like he didn't even care. Like, I don't know. I feel like when people like get so set and like are so like gung-ho and crazy about something, like it's just difficult to. I even imagine what's going through their head.
And I mean, I hope to God, like, it was just something like it was a work thing, or it was just a friend, or, you know, friend of the family, whatever it was. Because if this guy was cheating on his family and caused them to lose his entire house, oof. I'd be an angry mom on wife, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, there's really no coming back from that.
Right. So, but who knows what's, it could have been anything, you know, like.
Right. I mean, clearly this guy was crazy, so who knows?
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, that's really sad. People are wild.
I know.
Lesson of this episode. Don't set fires intentionally, please. Just don't do it. It won't end well for you.
Or buy anyone. Flowers instead. Send a card.
Yeah. Write a thoughtful letter. It's just...
singing telegram, you know.
Yeah. So many other options.
Right.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah. That's all I got on my fire arsenic people.
Well, thanks for telling your story.
Yes, thank you for listening.
By the next show, I'll get your name correct.
Thank you. It's okay. I'll go by whatever. Well, you know, within reason. And I'll draw the line somewhere.
I know you've been feeling a little down with the germs, so hopefully we'll be able to record maybe live next week, and maybe we can report that we watched some kind of cool movie or did something that we can talk about.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Tell my stomach all situated. I'll just say that.
Right. Hey, I just got over it, so you keep your stinky germs over there.
I know, literally. We're just getting them out of our system first. It'll be fine.
A couple more weeks and then we'll start seeing some warmer weather, I pray. So
me too. I need it. Need some sun.
Yes. So, but on that note, I know we kept you guys a while because I had a lot to say in the beginning. I'm sorry.
No, and we loved it.
Yeah. We got to go.
Stay creepy, guys.
Bye.
Bye.